Hello all and welcome back to another day here at the Damage Report. I'm John Iderola, already in a bit of a mood thanks to technology, but there is something going for us today, and that is the return once again of Dan Evans. Dan Evans, host of the Power Report Audio Face podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Also got a shout out, Good Morning Bad News, with my mug here. That's on TikTok. Thank you. We just passed 1 million followers on TikTok. Oh. Super happy and proud of that. So definitely check us out there. But it's so great to be with you here, John, on this wonderful day of news and tea, honestly.
Exactly.
Got great tea also.
Congratulations on that. That is my favorite content on TikTok. And it would still be my favorite content if I had watched any other content as well. But no, it's awesome, super high quality videos, and you get to see Dan. So everyone go check that out. We're gonna have a show, and hopefully everything is going to work. Little behind the scenes info, TeamViewer will not stop trying to open on my computer. Like, I've shut it down 4 times. I don't understand. Have I been hacked? Has one of the kids watching this hacked me? I don't understand. But anyway, we're gonna try to have 1.5 hours of news regardless, because there is a lot that we need to talk about. Dan, I'm gonna make you talk about the trucker protest, so get ready for that. We've got some amazing video. The disconnect between the American conservative rhetoric around that protest and what poll after poll after poll of Canadians shows they think of it is pretty fascinating. We've got an interview with AOC breaking down a few different things about the Democratic Party that I think are pretty interesting. A crazy poll of Democratic voters. I know I get obsessed over polls, but I have got to get some help in figuring out how to process this information. And then we got a whole bunch of other stuff. We got some Coachella, because I hear Dan is into music, so we've got that for you. And cops being terrible, so you know, some stuff is as it normally is. But with all that said, everyone, please hit the like button, share the stream so that people know we're live. And Dan, you ready to talk about some stuff?
Live and alive, baby, let's go.
Okay, let's do it, let's jump into this video.
You're telling me these peaceful truckers who are opposing government overreach, surrounded by kids and, you know, very family oriented affairs, that's a threat to the sovereignty of the government of Canada? I don't think so, Justin Trudeau. I don't think so. But what's amazing, they're protesting government overreach. Trudeau says, what's right? The answer? More government overreach. Like, how does that even make sense?
Okay, so yes, according to their laughing giggly logic, if these protesters cloak whatever it is that their issue is in any given protest as being against government overreach, then obviously the government can never do anything, because then via the laws of irony, that would only be proving them right. Which in some cases certainly could be true, and we can and probably will pick apart the decision to invoke this emergency order by the Canadian government. But Dan, I just love there the unwillingness to be real about what the protest is. Like to say that they're surrounded by kids and family affairs. Like, you don't even know what you're saying at that point. Like, many of the protesters, perfectly peaceful. They're just there. I might disagree with them. They're just there. But it is not the case that they're all just surrounded by family affairs, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. So what have you been thinking about these ongoing protests?
Yeah, well, the Fox coverage especially, John, I see a familiar script that, as many astute watchers of the Damage Report and people on the left know, John, whenever Fox News is covering a protest that has to do with any leftist or left of center kind of social issue, it's what are the protesters doing? They're crazy, they're looters, they're rioters, mm-hmm. They're damaging property, watch out for them. But I remember back in the day when Fox News was covering the Bundy protests, where you had a convenient situation where you had armed thugs, arguably, who were taking up arms against the government for whatever land dispute they're having. And Fox News's coverage was, look at these patriots, look at these wonderful people, and look at what they're doing. So even though, I mean, especially because this is a story that's happening in Canada, it is way out of Fox News's wheelhouse. I mean, anyone to find a consistent 30 seconds of time in the past 2 months before this that Fox News, especially Fox and Friends in the Morning, has talked about Canada in any way like this. Mm-hmm. It is.
I mean, we have
really
it here.
Easy. Yeah, yeah.
Like this is the most Canadian the news has ever been.
And we should do a little bit more of it. Like, hockey is fun, but I just got to say that Fox News has an interest in peddling a political agenda here. So they're just copy pasting old strategies. If it's a protest they like, then they have a whole rhetoric to say, these are Americans, they're Canadians, whatever it is, they're having their freedoms being impinged upon, and so we have to care. But of course, if it's anything that has to do with a social justice issue, then Fox News is first to attack it.
Yeah. Yeah, and some conservative watching this might think, well, hey, then aren't you doing the exact opposite? You just like the protests you like, and you want to shut down the free speech of everyone you don't. Well, again, for one thing, like, actually watch the content before you tell me what it is that I'm advocating for. Have I called for them to be hauled off the streets of cities across Canada? No, I honestly don't know exactly what the answer should be. I definitely am not one of those that, up until this protest, the right totally encapsulates, which is, protests can never be inconvenient. I don't believe that. We can debate on individual cases whether, like, blocking traffic is tactically a good idea, but I definitely think it should be allowed. I'm not saying they should be hauled away, but I would love any conservative to watch this who is watching this to answer the question, okay, so then for how long? And your knee-jerk reaction might be, no, they can shut down these cities forever. For 10 years if they have to. I don't think that you actually thought that through before you came to that conclusion, but let's actually talk. If you have a protest that is trying to draw awareness to something, which, as we'll show, people are aware of it, they're not being convinced by the protest. Although, again, protests are under no obligation to have everyone gradually come to agree with them. So then, for how long? And I have never heard anyone on Fox answer the question of what is a reasonable amount. Now, we know, as you alluded to, up until these protests, these are not hypothetical hypocrisies that we're describing. Kayleigh McEnany was the press secretary for a government that did, let's just say, overreach when it came to responding to the protests that sprang up from the killing of George Floyd. Donald Trump was black bagging people in the cities and shoving them in the back of unmarked minivans, and she was perfectly happy with that. Outnumbered wasn't giggling about how ridiculous that was at that point. So I'm just saying, we're here trying to be understanding and trying to demonstrate actual principles when it comes to protests, whether we agree with the protests or not. Could you at least pretend to do that? Could you cosplay actually caring about any of the content of what you're getting all worked up about? And Dan, I don't think that it's gonna happen. This is all just opportunism. That's all it is.
Definitely not. And as I think you're going to get into in a moment, the idea that these protests are, oh, they're just simply peaceful. These are just families going around here. And let's remember, they are protesting vaccine mandates, more or less. These are right-wing ideologues. And as you're going to get into, I think, in a moment, these aren't totally, you know, freedom-loving, safe people. These are actually people with somewhat violent intentions that you'll find that people on Fox News have no problem fanning the flames of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some I think are just, you know, they've been messed up by the news, basically. Like, I think protest and being really passionate about things can be a great thing, but this, of all things, you could get the shot and you'd be fine. You'd be better, actually, because you'd be as protected as you can be medicinally from the virus. Like, this is the thing to get worked up about. Again, like I said, like, I think you should be able to block traffic, you should be able to do whatever, but if I did it just because I was so pissed that Netflix didn't do a second season of Dark Crystal, like, you can look at that and say, really, that's your cause? Well, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. But as he alluded to, we do have more to get to, so let's jump into this next video.
You have the people's support, and I think the only way that that could be broken is if, say, some outsiders try to disrupt what has been a peaceful protest. Do you agree?
Okay, so that is Sean Hannity lying in a couple different directions simultaneously, and we're going to address all of them in this clip. So the first is talking there to a representative of this protest that you have the people's support, which is not literally untrue. There are people who support them, but colloquially, that sort of expression is used when a majority or at least a significant chunk of the population supports you. As we will show, that is not the case. At the same time, though, he's multitasking. He managed to fit in that there has been no illegal acts, no, for instance, attempts to burn down buildings, violent confrontations with counter protesters or with people who just live in the area, no reasons to believe that more violence could be coming. And at the same time, he also prepped his audience that if there is violence in the future, it's not going to be their fault, even if they're the ones who are doing it. You heard it in that clip, and it has been a touchstone of his coverage for about 2 weeks now on this issue. So back on the 14th, he said that if Canadian truckers are arrested, quote, he can't guarantee that at that point people won't defend themselves, laying sort of the philosophical groundwork for if they become violent, you forced them into it. That's definitely how he's approached violent protesters in the past, by the way. Earlier, 3 days before that, he said to Justin Trudeau, people may die if truckers are arrested. And he looks at that as just this like angelic being floating above it. People may die. Who's to say who will be killing who? But people may die. Wouldn't that be a tragedy if you forced that to happen? Now, of course, never acknowledging, Dan, that for instance, Alberta police seized a cache of firearms, body armor, and ammunition that you can see in this tweet. They will never acknowledge this. And again, that doesn't mean that all of the protesters are violent or that the protest fundamentally is invalid. But you kind of have to understand the context when you're predicting murder in the future, that they won't even acknowledge the guns. So, and then to do that, to not acknowledge the likelihood of violence or the fact that they have guns, and then to go one step further, as Jesse Waters do, to compare them to Gandhi of all people, or Tucker Carlson, who said last week that it is the greatest human rights protest or social movement in a generation. So they're going, I think, a little bit too far there, Dan. What do you think?
Yeah, they are using this as a convenient ideological and rhetorical weapon for their audience to say, hey, look, people around the world are resisting vaccine mandates and we should join them. They are clogging up the ports, even though we were just complaining a couple months ago about Joe Biden clogging up the ports. Mm-hmm. And they are doing this for our reasons, for our righteous reasons, not for other reasons. You literally had Ben Shapiro at one point saying like, listen, I know I've been upset with people blocking traffic during protests before, but this time it's righteous. They don't care about the hypocrisy, which, I mean, after years and years of doing this, John, you and I both know intimately they do not care about the hypocrisy.
I know.
But you, is the audience and has to be able to talk to other people and say that this isn't the same as worker solidarity. This isn't the same as some type of movement where, oh, look, we're trying to amplify what workers are saying, what truck drivers are saying, what the working class is saying. No, this is an anti-vax protest that is arguably being astroturfed by a lot of these political groups, but definitely being used as a rhetorical device for Republicans to just antagonize against any progress against on COVID-19 at all.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Definitely. I mean, the funding for it has been massively astroturfed. The fact that like international right-wing media gives outsized attention and bizarrely disconnected from reality coverage of it, because at the end of the day, they don't care about Canadian truckers. Kayleigh McEnany and Sean Hannity are never gonna talk to a Canadian trucker again once this is over. It is convenient for their own purposes. This is not about them. And as I've said before, wait until the day comes when the Canadian truckers are protesting for higher wages or better working conditions. We'll see how many primetime interviews they get on Fox News for that. And so,
why doesn't Sean Hannity ask those truckers what their health insurance is like?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, and by the way, in a little bit, when we get to Jeanine Pirro, she's going to seem to acknowledge that there are other things that their lives could be better on, but she's not going to advocate for those. In any event, you're totally right. And like they're trying to give their audience an insane idea of what these protests are like, what the protesters are like, and also get them ready for, okay, if violence happens, because it looks like there's at least a chance of it, I want you to already be, let's say, vaccinated against the idea that these protesters will be in any way responsible if they begin killing them people. But we'll see, we'll see. In any event, I want to respond to one of the other lies, which is you've got the support of the people. Well, again, it is true. There are some people who support them, and 100% of Fox hosts support them. That's true. But what do people actually think? So there's this new poll by Angus Reid that talked to a bunch of Canadians. What do they think that protesters should do? 72% said go home now. They've made their point. 6% aren't sure. 22% said stay in Ottawa and other protest sites until their demands are met, which 22% isn't nothing. Let's acknowledge that. And there's some uncertainty among other people. But 72% say, dude, we get it. Go home. And by the way, they're paying attention. This isn't a thing where there's a lot of ignorance. 2/3 polled said that they've been following it in the news and discussing it with friends and family. 3 in 10 say they're still paying some attention to it. Only about 1% aren't aware of this. So people get what the protest is. So I think that their evaluation of what should happen is actually worth something. This is something they understand. By the way, more than 2 in 5 now say that Canadian protests have made them more inclined to support ongoing restrictions related to masking and vaccination requirements to cross the border. So again, you can do your protest, but we get to evaluate how it's working. And it seems like it's actually driving people against your position. That doesn't mean you don't get to protest, but we should evaluate the context.
Yeah, every single argument for protest, which I, as a leftist, I love me a good protest. But against Occupy, they were like, what are they doing? Their protest is aimless. When are they gonna go home? Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to now, and it's they need to stay out there longer, even though their movement is working against them, even though more people are now convinced by masking because of this, even though I'm saying, hey, look, if there's violence, that them's the breaks. That's just what happens. Like, mm-hmm. At least I think a lot of people do at the end of the day, even if they're divorced from politics, they try to care about some ideological consistency, even if they don't have it themselves. And of course, people don't have memories long enough to know, oh, I know back what Sean Hannity was saying back during Occupy, like we always do here. But like that's our job to be able to say and call that out here. And so I hope deep down that people will start to see through a lot of these inconsistencies, not even call them hypocrisies. It's like, why do you have this one stance here and this other stance here? Clearly, you're just picking favorites. Hopefully, people are able to see how often both sides pick favorites and act accordingly based on that.
Exactly. And by the way, we're not saying that you can't have any hypocrisy or anything that's in the neighborhood of hypocrisy. You can, for instance, support the goals of one protest and not another. That's not hypocrisy, but how about this? How about this as an expectation for consistency? As you pointed out, Ben Shapiro said, I had a different position on a different one. Okay, but how about not being supportive of legislation being passed that allows people to run down and murder protesters? How about that? How about like very specific hypocrisies being voided? Like how could Trudeau possibly arrest people that have camped out and have declared that they're never leaving? But when the Seattle Autonomous Zone was set up, you wanted it to be cleared out. You wanted Occupy Wall Street to be cleared out. The protesters outside of the White House should be bashed out of there by cops with riot shields and that sort of thing. Like you can have some hypocrisy. We're humans, we're flawed creatures. We're not all robotic, we're not Mark Zuckerberg. But I'm saying you could at least not try to outlaw the same sorts of protests that you'll spend weeks lauding in another circumstance. That's all I'm asking for at least.
100% right, John.
Let's jump into this.
Trudeau is now going to listen to Biden. Biden now has the final word on what you should do if someone is protesting peacefully. Biden, the same guy who in the summer of 2020 decided that he would allow people to burn down, streets and businesses and create all kinds of problems.
Okay, obviously, as many acknowledge, there's a bit of a problem with that. Joe Biden was not president in 2020. Now, that is a fact that I guess we can't expect Jeanine Pirro to be familiar with since it hasn't yet been printed on the label of a bottle of Pinot Grigio. But it is kind of seemingly important that he had no ability to stop it. And by the way, let's say that she backtracks and says, okay, I misspoke. What I meant was that he was supportive of it. Was Joe Biden marching? Like in downtown LA, who thinks that Joe Biden was supportive of those protests? Absolutely madness, Dan.
Noted Antifa member Joe Biden, who is further to the left than Bernie Sanders or Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren on racial justice.
Yeah, I don't.
And was elected on such a stance. Yeah, sure, whatever. Not exactly. Like it matters.
But no, there's no expectation for even understanding who was president. Like 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. It wasn't ancient history. This isn't like, as you were alluding to, like remembering exactly what positions Sean Hannity took during Occupy Wall Street. It was like a day ago. It just happened, Janine.
Everyone's talking about COVID. Everyone's saying COVID-19 was, it feels like 2020 has been one long year. Yeah, think of it. It was just like one long year, like a day ago, like a month ago. Like, it's recent stuff for a news person to be able to know. So it's just a fundamental just abandonment of their jobs.
Exactly. Now, I want to go just a little bit further because that is the part of the video that understandably people focus on and mock, as I just did. But let's take a little bit of a listen to what she said immediately after that.
When they start going after people's money, understand these truckers work very hard. They are salt of the earth, and they are not people who have a lot of money. They can't afford to protest. They really can't. But they're all about freedom. They're the heroes that we loved when we needed all of those things delivered to us.
Yep.
Now you're marginalizing them. Now you're really teeing them off. They haven't done anything. There isn't any kind of problem other than than maybe somebody had a flag. Well, that's going to happen in any group. But I think that this is going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I love a casual brushing off of like the swastika flags. It'll happen in any group. I know. I have people, get together sometimes, play board games. There's always one swastika flag guy in every group, Dan. But anyway,
it's always the guy who's a little too edgy in Cards Against Humanity. We know.
Exactly. The dude who's like playing Secret Hitler, but like laughing at all the wrong points. But anyway, yeah. And look, so you get the same sort of mixes with Sean Hannity. So now you're really teeing them off. I mean, they've totally not committed any crimes. But if they do, clearly I'm telling you what position I'm going to have on that. If they begin killing people. Which again, there's no reason that they would or should, but they don't seem to be that worried about it. And then you also have they're the salt of the earth, which is an interesting saying. Of course, salt has the characteristic of being white. And what do you know? The people that get to be labeled as salt of the earth tend to be as well. So truckers are salt of the earth. Anything they do, we don't have to actually look at it. We don't get to say, is this actually in line with what most people think? Is this in line with the science? No, they're salt of the earth. If they say it, it is freedom with a capital F. But if you're a different sort of protester with a different sort of message or movement, you're not salt of the earth. You're a leftist radical. You're an Antifa. We don't have to listen to you. Take a look at these like little rhetorical tools they use to shut down critical thinking. Any other thoughts, Dan?
Yeah, you're a lot right on all those different things there. Like, I am hopefully going to use this opportunity of Janine Pierre and all these other people defending these kinds of protests and what they're doing the next time leftists or anyone even in the center do any kind of basic protest for general human rights. Mm-hmm. Or, the laws that are supposed to be practiced in this country being put in place and into practice for equally for people. I'm going to point it. No, Sean Hannity says, hey, listen, cops might have guns on the street. And so people might have people on the street. So, hey, whatever happens, happens. These are Sean Hannity's words about protests. Hey, and Janine Pirro says, listen, you're going to see some weird flags in places that sometimes things happen. We all have friends. This is a Janine Pirro quote right here. So yeah. Janine Pirro, noted mentor member of Antifa. That's just how it's going to go. Maybe I'll twist it that way because I like doing that for fun. But ultimately, I'm running out of ways to figure out how to take moments of hypocrisy like this and weaponize it back against them.
Mm-hmm. You are right to. I will join you in that. That won't stop them, of course. But we will stick to our metaphorical guns, which we prefer. Although Dan has been known to brandish actual firearms on the show. In any event, before we go to our break, I just want to read one quote from an article in Fortune. It broke my heart. So they're profiling a bunch of the protesters. And one, Jake Klassen, is a 39-year-old who's been a truck driver for nearly two decades and drives 3 weeks of the month hauling loads to the US as an owner operator. He said, I want to be able to have my own choice. He said he hasn't been able to visit his 9-year-old daughter in months. She's receiving palliative care at St. Amant, a care residence in Winnipeg. But due to restrictions that require visitors to be fully vaccinated, Klassen and his wife can't see her. Quote, this is something worth fighting for. So he has a 9-year-old that has been in care for months. They could get vaccinated and then be able to see her. And I can only imagine how terrified she must be and how lonely she must be. But this is pitched as, how dare the government stop us from potentially bringing a deadly virus into a place where they're desperately trying to keep COVID out. And I just, yes, things are worth fighting for. In this particular situation, is this how you should be? Get the damn shot. You can still protest against mandates, by the way, if you get vaccinated. Did you know that? You can do it. Supposedly, that's what the WASP does. But anyway, just get it so you can be with your kid. These people are absolutely mental, and it didn't have to happen. Who thinks that Jake Klassen, if the right wing media internationally hadn't lost their minds during the pandemic, that he would have ended up like, no, no matter what, there is no universe. I don't care what Dr. Strange says. There is no universe where I'm not going to see my kid. Just madness what they've led people, the road that they've led people down.
It really hurts. Like, there was a story in the LA Times, I'll go really quickly, where a police officer, and you know the rates of cops and their rate against like being against vaccines, unfortunately, because they deal with people so much, got married, and his wife caught COVID more or less with the pregnant daughter, and they had to, like, the guy had to make a choice. Oh no, if my wife and kid don't get vaccinated, one or both of them might die. And he's actually waffling between this choice. It's devastating, these real world consequences that these right wingers, that these misinformation has on people. And so it's devastating, but I don't want to lose sight of that.
Yeah, no, good point. Okay, with that, we are going to take our first break. We come back, we're going to touch base with a couple important topics, including AOC's commentary on the state of the Democratic Party, as well as what Biden can do to stop an absolute massacre from happening politically later on this year. And then Sarah Palin's lawsuit finally reaches its sort of predicted end. We'll give you the details after this. Okay, everybody, let's see what is going on out there. First of all, after our show, Indisputable will be coming up, as it always does. Dr. Rashad Ritchie will be joined by A.B. Burns Tucker, who I haven't actually seen as a co-host on the show before. So maybe a first time, but in any event, you can get that coming up right after our show. Also want to remind you that to celebrate TYT reaching its 20th anniversary on Monday, you can get 20% off site-wide at shoptyt.com. There are also a couple of new 20th anniversary designs that are available, so shoptyt, you can see that. Anyway, thank you for being with us. I'm John Iderol. If you're just joining us, we've got Dan Evans, who sure goes back a ways with us and now is off doing amazing things that have far eclipsed us over here. So it is always great to have you here, Dan. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was recently interviewed by David Remnick of The New Yorker, and they touched on a lot of different topics. And look, I understand I'm biased, I guess, when it comes to members of the squad, and perhaps Ocasio-Cortez in particular, but I found a lot of her comments to be very honest and revelatory. So we're going to dive into a few different topics. First of all, overall, the state of Congress and the Democratic Party there says, honestly, it's an S show. It's scandalizing every single day. What is surprising to me is how it never stops being scandalizing. Some folks perhaps get used to it or desensitized to the many different things that may be broken, but there's so much reliance on this idea that there are adults in the room. And in some respects there are, but sometimes to be in a room with some of the most powerful people in the country and see the ways that they make decisions, sometimes they're just susceptible to groupthink, susceptible to self-delusion. And I certainly agree. I think that we need to bear in mind that we have been trained to believe that people in positions of authority are smarter and better than us, and that includes our politicians, when our politicians are generally chosen to run by funders for their ability to draw in campaign donations and their baked in name recognition. That's pretty much it. It's not like the head of the Democratic Party is like going to universities looking for up and coming minds. Like, that's not how it actually works, Dan, unfortunately.
You know what, John, I'm going to challenge you on this, because AOC and the squad, they haven't been doing what they're supposed to be doing and calling out the corruption in Washington. I mean, when will they actually go out and say that the people in Washington are, oh, wait a minute, this is the article in which AOC says that the people in Washington are corrupting and it feels like they're adults in the room, but they really aren't. Like, I had a totally separate, I hope people got my bad voice reference and what I'm referencing here on this fine established network. But the people, I had this random unrelated thought the other day that, like, yo, Bernie Sanders is gonna retire from the Senate at some point. And it's like, wow, who is going to be the next, like, who is going to be not far enough on the left to come outside of Washington, D.C. sometimes and go, Yes, I also agree. This is ridiculous. I also agree that what you're seeing here is corruption day in and day out that is demoralizing sometimes. But I think that we can expand our imaginations and have a better political future. And that's why I'm in Congress to fight for that. Whether it's in the House or in the Senate, like we have people who we may not agree with on all different times. I don't agree with AOC on a number of different things she's done in her tenure in office, but I'm happy that she has used her platform continuously to be on Instagram and say like, okay, I'll take random questions from people and tell you really deeply how I'm seeing things in DC. It's a perspective that a lot of politicians only give their six-figure donors and not regular people. And more often than not, she is fighting for things that like people on the left really care about. And so we're going to go into more quotes here, but I think what she's saying here is really good that there's a politician who is admitting, yes, the same stuff you're seeing that you dislike, I also dislike as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and to the point where it, look, she talks as she has, you know, frankly before that, like the expectation, which we get because we watch politicians, that she's in office, so she will always be in office, is not necessarily the case. Like she says that she thinks constantly about getting out of there, and I don't know why she wouldn't. She's just constantly attacked from all sides. Oh, and by the way, I'm not sure exactly who you were doing an imitation of, but I definitely get the sort of person. And man, have they made the internet even less fun to be on than it was previously. That said, we're gonna jump ahead just a little bit to get to more of her criticism of the Democratic Party. She says, President Biden thought that he could talk with Manchin like an old pal and bring him along. And frankly, that was what the White House strategy was in terms of what they communicated to us. That's how they tried to sell passage of not even half a loaf, but a tenth of the loaf. It was, quote, we promise we'll be able to bring them along. There is this idea that this is just a temporary thing and we'll get back to that. But I grew up my entire life in this mess. There's no nostalgia for a time when Washington worked in my life. No, well, not at least for people like AOC. And that also, by the way, that ties back to what she said before, because like the self-delusion, those sorts of things about the like the belief that there's adults in the room, the lack of urgency from them. Like you see this in Biden, you see it in a lot of Congress too, in that their daily approach is not the same as AOC's. They do not feel the pain of the community in the same way, or even like if you don't wanna, like you wanna take the emotion out of it or whatever, they're not there to fix the same sorts of problems. There might be some problems, some sort of like meta belief that the stock market could be going up more, but these aren't urgent questions of survival. And so if there's like congestion in Congress, if Congress doesn't really accomplish much, that may not be preferable for some of these representatives, but it's not like the opportunity cost is just not the same thing for them. And so I sort of understand why she or other members of the squad would be more frustrated by the lack of the Democratic Party or to get anything done, because they feel that gap much more.
Yeah, and those were our frustrations with the 2020 election and the Democratic primary in general, because you saw a slate of Democrats with a slate of different strategies for how to address congressional gridlock. And Joe Biden, I think less through having a compelling strategy, because I don't think a lot of people truly believed that, oh, you can just have fine, you know, meetings here or there with Congress people behind doors, especially Republicans who have been obstructing for the past decade, and get things done. In fact, I remember at least during the first, not even 100 days, like 20, 30 days of the administration, people like Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer were saying, no, we understand that during the Obama administration, there was too much of an inclination to try to work with Republicans and reach across the aisle, so to speak, and compromising solutions, when it was very clear from Mitch McConnell down to whatever ankle biting Tea Party member who just got elected into Congress, that they didn't want anything Obama wanted to get like accomplished to happen. Mm-hmm. They're doing the same thing with Biden because they don't want Democrats to accomplish anything. At this point, Republicans don't even have a counter strategy of what they want to accomplish or not, unless it's like book banning. But
she talks about it.
So I'm once again glad that there is someone in Congress who is going out in the press and saying, no, this, what my party is doing right now is losing them support. It's losing them votes, because the party needs to hear it from someone.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, we don't have time, but she specifically goes into the lack of willingness of Biden to cancel student loan debt as a massive demoralizing factor for an absolutely critical voting bloc. Critical both in the future, in these midterms, and whoever the Democrat that runs in 2024 is, but also in him getting into office to then later completely disappoint them. But yeah, in terms of what you were just saying about the Republicans and what she was saying earlier, like that is why we continually come back to making sure that people understand the fundamental asymmetry. Politics in America is not different sides that all have different goals, but they all have lots of goals. They all really have lots of things they want to get done, and they get in there and they fight it out on the floor of the Senate, and campaigns are these vigorous ideas of different platforms that match together. No, that's not how it works at all. There's like five people in elected office that have identified actual economic problems and want to solve them. There's the vast, vast majority of the Democratic Party, which is largely happy with the way things are. Maybe thinks we could do a little bit better economically, but that's it. Not anything that's going to cost a lot of money, nothing fundamental. And the Republicans, who already have won, that dominate everything economically, and so are constantly looking for distractions to hijack not just news cycles, but entire sessions of Congress. That is why you had the Tea Party Act. That's why you have the soon to come American trucker movement and CRT and nationwide meltdowns about trans high school athletes and things like that. These are the sorts of things that you can focus on if you don't fundamentally care about them, but you want to make sure that people are really distracted, not thinking about the fact that their lives are absolute hell and unlikely to get any better. And she seems to get that at least. In any event, you're saying we should break already? That's so soon. That's so soon. Can we do this fast? Let's do this fast. So this really fast. It's okay. Okay, well, we're gonna do this fast. Okay. Sarah Palin has been engaged in a lawsuit over the New York Times, in her view, defaming her and ruining her reputation, which has harmed her both politically and monetarily. We've given you a few updates on this as it's been going. Well, it's now done. A jury has rejected Sarah Palin's libel suit against the New York Times just yesterday. A day after the judge said he would dismiss the case if the jury ruled in her favor, because her legal team had failed to provide sufficient evidence that she had been defamed by a 2017 editorial erroneously linking her to a mass shooting. She sued way back in 2017, claiming that that had damaged her career as a political commentator. Yes, people just want her incisive analysis and critique. Anyway, and a consultant. What, because national campaigns want your view? This is so madness. Anyway. Because blah, 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 they said that she had been involved with this thing. So she said, it was devastating to read a false accusation that I had anything to do with murder. I felt powerless, that I was up against Goliath. I was David. Give me a break. Anyway, when a lawyer for the Times cross-examined Palin, he first asked whether that initial round of false accusations back in 2011 had in fact hurt her reputation much. She acknowledged that she continued to make appearances on Fox News and even signed a new contract with the network in 2013. She was also the featured character in multiple short-lived reality television shows. Then, by the way, they brought up the fact that she was on The Masked Singer. So she was on that in 2020, well after the editorial that launched the most recent legal action. In the run-up to her trial, her attorneys filed a motion to bar any showing of the video in the courtroom, which might be a legal strategy or might just be trying to again save her reputation from her singing voice. Anyway, Palin tried to bar any mention of it. Forced to talk about it, she said it was the most fun 90 seconds of my life. And when asked how much she'd been compensated, she said it paid some bills. So she was still brought onto Fox News, as if anyone thinks that her being linked to a mass shooting or advocacy for political violence would hurt her in conservative media. She was still put on reality shows, Dan. If her reputation is falling apart or people don't want to hear from her, it's because she's from a billion years ago, not because of some editorial that nobody read at the time.
And for the folks at home who are like kind of young, Sarah Palin was the former governor of Alaska who I don't think even finished her term, who was like the vice president of John McCain, who didn't win the presidency. So even the idea that, okay, let's stretch this out as much as we can and say she's a political consultant. Yeah. In what way? Like, what is her expertise? What is her success? So the big picture I want people to take away from these things is that this is one of a lot of efforts from conservative clowns of all kinds, more or less, at least in my opinion, to try to attack the precedent that protects media organizations from these types of frivolous libel lawsuits. Because one of these days, one of these conservatives is going to hit with this. and it's going to, in an increasingly conservative legal environment in the United States, genuinely challenge the rights of the press to be able to report on things, or even the rights of people to express their opinions, which some people might wonder, oh wow, doesn't that mean the Republicans are slowly enacting a form of cancel culture through the law? To which I would say, yes, you might be slowly catching on to thing. Huh?
Exactly. Oh, and by the way, if that does succeed, and who knows, it's a super majority of conservatives on the Supreme Court, so maybe it could. Fox News theoretically is gonna have a lot of problems. Right-wing media loves to throw baseless accusations that could be claimed to be libelous against people. I am assuming they are not unaware of that and think that the same sort of conservative judiciary that would allow them to outlaw public criticism would also protect right-wing media from the natural consequences of that. But as Dan said, put a pin in that. We're gonna see over the next couple of years. In any event, we do have to take our second break, so stick around. We'll be back after this. If you talk to Democrats, there's a lot of reason to believe they're quite frustrated with their party, and in particular with individual high profile members of that party. And some of it, when you poll people, makes all the sense in the world. Like when you ask Arizona registered Democrats what they think about Kyrsten Sinema, well, she is now at 8% approval, which is amazing. And by the way, you might think, okay, that's bad, but every politician has bad approval. No, wait, what you need to understand is in that poll, over just 1 year, she went from a 50% net favorability to a 72% net unfavorability. If we could bring back that chart for 1 second, you can actually see the almost instantaneous change in her polling after her opposition to the minimum wage, her, you know, the thumbs down thing. And when she skipped the January 6th commission vote, I've honestly never felt as optimistic about people following the news as I do seeing the results of this poll. So people actually do know what's going on. But anyway, they don't like her. They don't like, for instance, Dianne Feinstein. Her approval rating is down to the lowest point in 3 decades. And why not? She's bad. She doesn't get the sort of crises that we're trying to deal with. Kamala Harris, her popularity is underwater. Democrats are really split on Biden. But here's the thing. I came across a poll that I just don't understand, and I need Dan's help in figuring it out. A quarter of Democrats in a new Reuters Ipsos poll say they don't think their party took advantage of having control of the White House and Congress in 2021. 1 out of 4 said that, Dan. The rest are sort of split. Yeah, no, I think we carpe'd some diem in 2021. Hell of a job, Brownie, in taking advantage of the fact that you controlled all this. I don't understand that gap. They get that our politicians are bad, but they seem to think that they really tried.
Yeah, I think it comes from a number of different things. I think that Joe Biden's election, as we were kind of talking about earlier, had to do with the fact that, okay, he's not Trump. He'll kind of be a semblance of normalcy. I'll be able to just unplug from politics to some extent on a presidential level, not think about what the man is tweeting all day and, you know, all of those tropes and nonsense. And to some extent, he's delivered on that. But the substance of the matter, I think the other thing is that you have a lot of messaging coming out of the White House. And when it's coming out of a Democratic White House, that means it's coming out of most of the media organizations, all of cable, or MSNBC and CNN at least, and then Fox News is in their own world. But they're saying that Joe Biden's delivering for people, the tax credit for families, the rise in jobs. Yeah. They're saying all these different things that are okay. Sure, you can point to them on a chart and they're helping people. But I think people's tangible lives as they're recovering from the COVID-19 pandemic and the social and political and economic ramifications of this time, this unprecedented time period in history, the Democrats are not addressing these things. And you have, yeah, maybe 25% of people polled in this starting to get some sense of that. But I think it's on the left to continue to push on that, because that 25% is because of the left being loud and vocal on saying Joe Biden hasn't delivered on student debt. Joe Biden's actually gone as bad, if not further, than Trump on some of the things we hated Trump most on, such as protecting big business, such as immigration issues. I think it's just on us to continue hammering that point home, because I think we're getting somewhere, like you said, with Kyrsten Sinema. We see that Kyrsten Sinema is this bad person, but Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are these easy villains to have, so to speak. We need to start to expand the, and it's easy to market these villains in the press, right? So we need to start to expand this analysis to more of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy. I mean, when she's like giving a thumbs down to your wages going up, that's pretty cartoonish. That's true. We've tried to make sure that people understand that while Biden can't snap his fingers and get Manchin and Sinema necessarily to fall in line, he could definitely try harder, or outside of the legislative process, could be using executive orders, executive actions to get things done that he promised he would do. So again, I think as Dan says, this identifies some success in getting people to understand what's happening. But we are going up against, again, as Dan acknowledges, a media that largely are apologists for the Biden administration. And a lot of, you know, sort of apathy with the news following all of the Trump years and the pandemic and everything, which leaves us with a quarter who seem to get it. 28% of people who identified as Democrats say the party lacked resolve or was preoccupied with internal feuds. That's sort of a mixed bag of understanding what's actually causing nothing to get done. Nearly half blamed Republicans for thwarting Democrats' plans, which again, it's not even that it's untrue. Yes, virtually every Republican did oppose all of this, but they have the majority. They don't need, like, for some things, sure. But like for the reconciliation bill, they didn't need a single Democrat, a single Republican to join with them. So that is just not the excuse that people think it is. That's just what they hear constantly from so-called, you know, centrist moderate media. By the way, 25% say that the party had in large part accomplished its goals, which is either like a massive collective delusion of millions of people, or just an overrepresentation of the few who largely did get what they wanted from the Democrats and don't really have any higher aspirations for this administration. So the last scary stuff in these polls. Anyway, with that said, why don't we jump to a little bit more positive news, perhaps? Certainly not in an area we generally think of as positive, though. The families of 9 of the victims of the Sandy Hook mass shooting have agreed to a massive settlement with the maker of the rifle that was used in that particular shooting, Remington. It is a $73 million settlement, which is huge. And we want to give you some more details because it goes a little bit beyond just the money. So Remington made the Bushmaster AR-15 style rifle that was used at Sandy Hook. They also agreed to allow the families to release numerous documents they obtained during the lawsuit, including ones showing how it marketed the weapon, which we're going to turn to in a bit. It's actually part of why they were able to succeed in the first place. Beyond just the fact that this is a families who've been through a lot, who are getting some money, which is certainly good, this is considered a significant setback to the overall firearms industry, because the lawsuit worked around a federal law protecting gun companies from litigation by arguing that the manufacturer's marketing of the weapon had violated consumer law in Connecticut. So it was sort of novel legally in that way, that they went at the PR part of it rather than just fundamentally they're creating guns that can and are often are used to kill lots of people, Dan.
Yeah, this was a really interesting sort of case here, because for years, gun manufacturers have used really aggressive marketing in ways that are, you know, kind of obvious. Like you'll see commercials, which the idea of a gun commercial is just such a uniquely American thing. It's like a pharmaceutical ad. It's something you only see in the United States. But down to, I think maybe we'll talk about here, the way that guns are insidiously marketed in our media. Like, I'm a big music person, so like you know that rappers will like shout out different guns and things they have there. But you see Remington, for example, the company that's involved here, has guns all over popular video games, like all the Call of Duties. And so people understand these guns, they play with these things. And then what do you think they go to when they are about to make a gun purchase on their own? They go to whatever's in their head, because that's how marketing works.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.